This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib. And coming up on Africa News Tonight, Israeli troops have entered the center of Gaza City. Hundreds of Cameroonians are on the streets of English-speaking towns and villages protesting the murder of 30 civilians. And recent military coups in Africa are posing a direct challenge to civilian-led democratic governance on the continent. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The International Committee of the Red Cross today urged all sides fighting in Gaza to protect patients, workers, and those sheltering at hospitals. This call comes as fighting is reported near the Al-Shifa hospital in northern Gaza. Israel Defense Forces today continue to press their offensive to eliminate Hamas militants. Thousands of Palestinians continue to flee south from northern Gaza. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza today said at least 11,078 Palestinians have been killed, including 4,506 children in Israeli strikes. The ministry said 21 hospitals had gone out of service, along with 47 health centers. Fighting began October 7th after Hamas fighters attacked Israeli communities, killing about 1,400 people and taking more than 240 hostages, most of whom are still held in Gaza. A few hours ago, I spoke with reporter Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem for the latest developments.
Well, first of all, there's heavy fighting in Gaza. The Israeli troops have reached the perimeter of the Shifa hospital, and Palestinians say that there was tank fire. The Israeli army is not confirming it, and there are hundreds of people who are sheltering in the Shifa hospital or patients who can't be moved. Israel has warned Palestinians to evacuate all of the hospitals in northern Gaza and says that Hamas is using the underneath the hospital and has built a bunker and a command center. There are also some more tensions up north where after an apparent missile strike by Hezbollah or that came from Syria, Israel struck Syria and Hezbollah says seven of its members were killed. So it seems that both the fighting is intensifying in Gaza in the south and tensions between Israel and Hezbollah in the north.
The Hamas government actually today said that the Israeli airstrike on the territory's largest hospital killed 13 people. But the Israeli army, like you mentioned, has repeatedly accused Hamas of using hospitals, particularly Al-Shifa, you know, to coordinate their attacks against the army.
That's right. And Israel has, Israel has repeatedly said that everybody should leave. And in the last few days, thousands of Palestinians who were still in northern Gaza, despite Israeli warnings to leave, have fled to the south. Israel says Hamas is using people and patients in the hospitals as human shields. Palestinians deny the fact, the Israeli accusation that Hamas has a bunker underneath the hospital. They say that Israel's just making this up and is just using it as a way to target civilians.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken actually said today he welcomed Israel agreeing to daily humanitarian pauses in its offensive in northern Gaza.
Yes, Israel has, continued to say that it does not want to hit the civilians in Gaza, that its target is Hamas and the Hamas leadership, and that they have killed dozens of high-ranking Hamas people, that they have hit 130 tunnels and have hit some 15,000 Hamas targets in terms of infrastructure and things like that in Gaza. That said, Gaza is a very densely populated area, and according to the Palestinian Health Ministry, the death toll is something like 10,800, including thousands of children. So, I think the United States is growing increasingly concerned about the humanitarian situation and the growing death toll of civilians, and hopes that these humanitarian pauses are sort of the first step towards a ceasefire. Now, Israel says there cannot be a ceasefire until all of its 240 hostages are released. There are talks going on and have been going on with Egypt and Qatar to try to do some sort of limited hostage release in exchange for a temporary ceasefire. I just saw, by the way, that according to the health ministry, and again, it's affiliated with Hamas, the death toll has crossed 11,000 since the war began on October 7th. They're saying, according to the health ministry, it includes 4,500 children, and more than 27,000 people have been wounded.
And lastly, Linda, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at first kind of said, controlling Hamas, the security. But now, basically, he's saying, we do not seek to govern Gaza. We do not seek to occupy, but we seek to give it, a better future.
Yes, except that Israel never really intended to reoccupy Gaza. It doesn't want to have to provide municipal services to a very poor population of 2.2 million people, more than a million of whom are Palestinian refugees. Netanyahu has also said that Israel will have to maintain security control of Gaza, at least for a while. What seems to be shaping up is some sort of international consortium, which would help the Palestinian Authority, which controls the West Bank, to run Gaza. The Palestinian Authority says it will only do so in the context of the two-state solution, meaning an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, which really does not seem very likely, at least in the short term.
That was Linda Grantstein in Jerusalem. As Israeli troops move into the center of Gaza City, there are growing questions over what will happen to the Palestinian territory after the war between Israel and Hamas militants is over. As Henry Ridgewell reports, Washington has made it clear it would not support any reoccupation of Gaza some 18 years after Israel withdrew its forces and settlers.
What happens to Gaza after the Israel-Hamas war is finished? Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told ABC News this week that Israel will, for an indefinite period, have security responsibility for the territory. Following a two-day meeting of foreign ministers from the Group of Seven leading industrial democracies in Tokyo, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Wednesday Hamas must be defeated, but also gave a message to Israel.
It's also clear that Israel cannot occupy Gaza. Now, the reality is that there may be a need for some transition period at the end of the conflict, but it is imperative that the Palestinian people be central to governance in Gaza and in the West Bank as well, and that, again, we don't see a reoccupation.
Israel and its Western backers must have a plan for post-conflict Gaza, says analyst Yossi Meckelberg.
What happens if Hamas disappears as a political and military power? Who is sucked into this vacuum? It might be even worse than Hamas. I think we move into an interim period, and I think there is important. I really think should be a regional element to this.
U.S.-Israeli ties remain strong, but there are disagreements, says Meckelberg.
They don't trust Netanyahu. They don't trust the current government. And they know that, giving too much of a blank check can be dangerous.
In only the second joint statement from the group since the October 7th attack, G7 foreign ministers condemned Hamas and demanded the release of hostages and called for pauses in the conflict to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza. Japanese Foreign Minister Yoko Kamikawa said she believes it's important that the G7 was able to put out its first unified message as a written statement regarding the agreement on humanitarian pauses in Gaza. The G7 did not call for a more permanent ceasefire. Across the world, there have been protests calling for an end to the war. There is a danger that the conflict exacerbates global divisions, according to Meckelberg.
It's very tricky because the G7 obviously represent the more affluent part of the world, and the one that much of the resentment is directed at of of neglecting and taking an approach which protects their interests but not the rest of the world interests. And I think, you see, I for one find it difficult to feel sorry for their predicament, because the neglect of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict was criminal.
Meanwhile, the G7 reiterated its support for Ukraine as it continues to fight Russia's invasion. The group also condemned North Korea's missile tests and arms transfers to Moscow. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
The United Nations Security Council has called on the parties involved in the dispute over the Western Sahara to support efforts to resume negotiations to resolve the issue. However, some analysts say the UN mandate is unlikely to change the situation. Reporter Noura Haifada has more.
The resolution renewing the mandate of the United Nations Mission for Referendum on Western Sahara, or MINURSO, calls on the parties of the dispute to resume negotiation with the aim of rushing a permanent political solution. The United Nations Security Council resolution extending MINURSO for 1 year also calls for ensuring self-determination for the people of Western Sahara. Stéphane de Mistura, the Secretary General's personal envoy for Western Sahara, will lead efforts to resume talks. But Francisco Patrinola, an Italian expert on North Africa, says the resolution passed last month is not enough to move the talks forward. In part, he says, because Algeria has resisted negotiations.
It is very unlikely for the time being, but it can be completely ruled out, because Algeria has to take part in the dialogue in order to go ahead with its position and to support its instances about the Western Sahara issue. So they can't completely avoid to take part in the dialogues within the United Nations and in the other multilateral organizations.
Morocco and Mauritania invaded the West Sahara in 1975, when Spain left its former colony. Mauritania withdrew from the region in 1979 and has generally taken a neutral position on the issue over the past several years. Morocco now controls most of the territory. For years, the Polisario Front, an independence movement of the Western Sahara's indigenous Sahrawi population, has fought a running war with Morocco. The Front wants to hold a UN-backed referendum to let the people of the Western Sahara have a chance to decide between independence or being a part of Morocco. Morocco, however, has proposed establishing autonomy for the region, but leaving it under Moroccan sovereignty. El Sayed Al Hashem is a Mauritanian analyst.
قضية الصحراء هي قضية قضية شائكة جدا. سمعنا بشكل متكرر جدا تصريحات عديدة من أطراف الأزمة وهما المغرب والجزائر.
The Western Sahara is a very thorny issue, and the statements coming from Algeria and Morocco officials indicate that a compromise is still far off, as long as there is no real change in the positions of the two sides. Al Hashem says Mauritania is neutral and could bridge the gap when Algeria and Morocco are willing to reach a solution. Tunisian analyst Nizar Makni says it was not a surprise the Council approved extending the mission on the Western Sahara.
قرار ما استطيع انه كان منتظرا لانه لا يوجد من سوف يخلف ديماستورا حول هذا الملف الشائك.
The decision was expected. However, he says they do not expect this decision to have a significant impact on the course of the Western Sahara issue. After the United States recognized Morocco's claims over Western Sahara in 2020, in return for Rabat's rapprochement with Israel, the kingdom has since engaged in diplomatic efforts to rally other countries around its position. For Voice of America Africa, Noura Haifaidh in Tunis, Tunisia.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Hundreds of Cameroonians are on the streets of English-speaking towns and villages protesting the murder of 30 civilians and the abduction of scores of people by suspected separatist fighters. The government says it has deployed troops to Mamfe district on the border with Nigeria. Moki Edward Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Hundreds of people dressed in black march in Mamfe district, singing that they count on God to save their lives from the violence in their land. Mamfe is in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region near the border with Nigeria. Cameroon's military says that on Monday, separatist fighters opened fire and set several homes ablaze, killing at least 25 people and injuring many others. Authorities say civilians found 5 more bodies on Thursday and Friday. The government says protests were held in at least a dozen towns and villages. Mamfe Mayor Tabenchong Robertson Ashu describes the attack as inadmissible and calls on the government of Cameroon to deploy more troops to protect civilians.
We need more military posts, especially at Kajifu and Akwa village, as per the assistance to the needy and affected population. The president has given firm instructions to competent authorities to assist them. And of course, the council is doing everything it can to help them, as the mayor will be visiting the Boya Regional Hospital today to see the injured patients.
Ashu said the Mamfe District Council he leads sent food to hundreds of people who fled to safety in surrounding villages. Vian Mekala is Cameroon's highest government official in Manyu, where Mamfe District is located.
C'est une situation regrettable. Les terroristes ont utilisé des moyens de feu et des armes de guerre.
Vian says President Paul Biya has ordered the immediate deployment of heavily armed government troops to either arrest or kill separatist fighters who used combat weapons to kill innocent civilians. He says he met families who have been in grief since Monday to express the condolences of the government. The military and the separatists are trading accusations over the attack. Separatists on social media, including Facebook and WhatsApp, say government troops carried out an attack in Mamfe to give separatist fighters a bad name in the international community. The military says separatists organized the attack on Mamfe because civilians collaborated with government troops last week by denouncing fighters in the district. The military says several separatist fighters were killed in the attack. The government says it has deployed troops to free scores of civilians separatists allegedly abducted in several English-speaking towns and villages over the past 2 weeks. The government also is urging those who fled fighting to return to their homes. The separatist conflict broke out in 2017 after the military cracked down on English-speaking Cameroonians who had been protesting discrimination by the Francophone majority. The separatists say they want to protect English-speaking communities and carve out an independent state they call Ambazonia. Canada, which is attempting to negotiate an end to the conflict, says more than 6,000 people have been killed. For VOA News, I'm Moki Edwin Kinzeka in Yaoundé, Cameroon.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Recently, military coups in Africa are posing a direct challenge to civilian-led democratic governance on the continent. Some analysts believe these coups reflect the ambitions of militaries in some countries to reclaim what they perceive as their entitlement to rule. Paul Ndiho has more.
During a recent Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing in Washington,
five nations in the region are suffering coups since 2020. This includes Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso, Chad, and most recently, Niger. Mali and Burkina Faso have actually had two coups. At the same time, there have been an alarming increase in terrorist attacks by militant Islamist organizations.
The West African regional bloc, ECOWAS, is facing significant challenges in dealing with the rise of coups in the region, as highlighted by Moses Kihisa, an associate professor of political science and Africana studies at North Carolina State University.
One of the things that African Union has been doing, for which it deserves credit, is that every time there is a coup, every time there is an unconstitutional change of government using force, the African Union promptly suspends that country from its membership to the body.
The Sahel region has experienced a rise in jihad insurgency affiliated with Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. These militant Islamist threats are spreading across Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Chad.
But it's important for the United States to take a principled stance when coups occur. We need to lead with our values as we try to advance an agenda of good governance in the region. I think we need to make our position crystal clear. Military takeovers of civilian-led governments are coups.
Some analysts say these coups are increasing the risks of insecurity and political instability. In Mali, jihadist militants are once again targeting Timbuktu. However, unlike a decade ago, when French and US troops halted the insurgent advance, Mali's military junta has limited options for support. The U.S. and France suspended aid and military assistance and training in response to the coups. A surge in insurgent attacks in Mali and Burkina Faso has been attributed to the expulsion of French troops by military rulers in those countries. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
An Algerian journalist who was expected to be released this week was kept behind bars. The Associated Press says the move surprised his attorneys and colleagues and underscored ongoing concerns about media freedom in the North African country. Attorneys say they expected Mustafa Bendejama, editor-in-chief of the daily newspaper Le Provençal, to be released Tuesday after serving a 6-month sentence for helping political activist Amira Bouraoui leave Algeria in the face of criminal charges in February. The government has also accused him of writing favorably about pro-democracy street protests that led to the resignation of former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika in 2019. However, Bendama has remained imprisoned under a second sentence on charges of disclosing classified documents and using foreign funds to disrupt public order. Similar charges have been used against other Algerian journalists this year. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM stations.